Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 5 of the Nutcracker Syndrome podcast. Today, I want to go a little bit deeper into the scans and procedures, so specifically the venogram. In episode 2, I spoke about, so you think you have Nutcracker Syndrome, where do you go from here? And one of the things I talked about is kind of a first step, which is if you need the referral, get that referral from your primary care doctor or other doctor or any other doctor. For example, I got my referral from my gynecologist to see my interventional radiologist. And when I went to them and was told that I had a severe case of Nutcracker Syndrome via my CT scan, and it looked like I had pretty bad Maythurner, but it was inconclusive. It was a little cloudy on the CT. Our next step was doing a venogram. Now, sometimes before the venogram, if you don't have any CT scans with contrast or possible MRIs, so I was able to, I didn't have to get the MRI because the CT I had with contrast was enough for us to justify jumping to the venogram. So just know that they might have you, if you go to your initial consult with an interventional radiologist, before they jump to the venogram, they might send you to have a CT with contrast done with particular protocol that they submit, or send you for an MRI to get just a cleaner look at what's going on. So once you have those scans and it's justified that, yep, we need to go to do this venogram, they'll order that venogram. Most insurance will make you get a pre-authorization done, so there's a little bit of a wait time of them submitting the pre-auth and having insurance approve it before they can schedule you. So just know that it's not as, you might not leave getting the venogram scheduled that particular day, because we all love and know that insurance is so annoying. So there is that to also remember. But what is a venogram? So a venogram is a medical imaging procedure that uses x-rays to visualize the veins in your body. So they go through, for me, they went through both of my legs. They'll use a catheter to go up through your legs to be able to see kind of the inside workings of these veins. And I was also under anesthesia for this. I have heard reports of people that haven't been under anesthesia, and it wasn't necessarily super uncomfortable. But so just know that that's an option. I think there's some people who do venograms with anesthesia, without it. So just a good question to ask based on what your preference is. So why do you need a venogram as well? So this is what I was told from multiple people is considered the gold standard for measuring your vascular compressions. So as I stated in episode 2, if you already have a Nutcracker surgeon in mind, so if you're kind of, I always suggest be kind of like 5 steps ahead of yourself. I already knew that I was looking at the auto transplant route in the event that I needed it. So I went ahead and called Dr. Foley's office, spoke with the coordinator, talked to Dr. Zendejas' office, and was like, what do you need from this venogram to make sure that we're capturing it? I didn't want to make the assumption, and I had learned this the hard way because I had been assuming that these interventional radiologists or any other doctor would just kind of know what information to gather. So I'm glad I did that. And I went ahead and called these transplant surgeons' offices to get that information, because then I was able to sit down and say, okay, these are the exact measurements that I want to wake up and have on my report, because I'm going to be sending these to these particular doctors. So it was just nice for us to explicitly know that we were on the same page, because I have had some people say that they went in, asked to have their left renal vein measured, X, Y, and Z measured, and then they wake up and it's not actually done. So I'll go into some more specific details with that. But some of the things that I was told, just so you all know, again, do not just take my word for it. Call these doctors' offices and confirm exactly what they need. But the thing that I've gathered in my time is that the things that was noted is they want the percentage of the compression. They want the pressure gradient. So the pressure gradient is where they take the catheter. They will pull it from the left renal vein out into the intervening cava to demonstrate what that pressure difference is. For them to, and it'll be in, like, mine was just one, I think, I don't know if it's, I forget how it is. It's like MMHG is what it shows up as. So this is showing you how educated I am on that term itself. So my pressure gradient was not significant. And I also had a moderate compression. I had a 48% compression of the left renal vein with a 1 pressure gradient, which is not significant. And so they'll need the percentage of the compression of the pressure gradient. And for them to note any collaterals that might be, so these are veins that have worked their way, the blood has worked its way into these collateral veins, but either into your spine, up into your chest, along with the areas where the blood might be refluxing, such as your blood, is the left renal vein, is that blood, because it can't get through the compression, is it refluxing into your kidney? Is it refluxing down your left ovarian vein? So those are the four kind of main things: the percentage of the compression, the pressure gradient, any collateral systems, and if there's any blood refluxing and where it's refluxing to. Now, something that I learned along the way to speak with your interventional radiologist about is making sure that they're inserting enough dye into that left renal vein area so that they can capture the collateral system. What I gathered, I only had one very small, very faint collateral that was captured on my venogram that was actually weaseling its way up into my spine and causing pressure on my spinal cord. I actually think if that collateral vein was not captured, meaning if my interventional radiologist would have used even a tinge less of dye, that collateral wouldn't have shown up on the venogram, and I probably would have been denied potentially for an autotransplant. There's no way of me 100% knowing a definitive denial would have happened, but I have seen that if people have a moderate compression like I had, so it's less than 50%, compressed, I didn't have a significant pressure gradient at all, and if I had no collateral veins demonstrated, they could have come back and just been like, this isn't conclusive evidence enough to demonstrate to us. So I could have been denied for a procedure that, now that I've had it, was absolutely the procedure I needed, no questions asked. So speak to your interventional radiologist about that, about how you've heard stories about there not being enough dye inserted, the collateral system isn't captured well. So as an example, I had that one very measly collateral vein noted on my venogram, but when they went into the auto transplant, I was told that I didn't have the most significant, like the worst collateral system Dr. Foley had ever seen, but it was about middle ground. So there was definitely way more collaterals that were there that weren't actually captured the day of my venogram. So just something to think about there. Another thing I've seen on the Facebook group is the argument between the venogram being on a tilt table versus a non-tilt table. I was in the supine position, not on a tilt table. So there's some arguments for using a tilt table. From what I have gathered, and again, I'm a singular experience here, is that not a lot of IRs, interventional radiologists, do use tilt tables. So if that's something that you do want, if they don't use a tilt table, ask them if they can refer you to another IR that does use a tilt table. If you can find one in your area and somebody that's in network. The reason why the tilt table, the argument behind the tilt table, is that when your body is tilted, meaning that when you're in the supine position, so you're kind of in corpse pose, you're laying flat on your back, that when you're tilted, so your feet are pointing down and your head is up, or vice versa, I forget exactly the way it goes, that will influence the route of the blood and actually demonstrate to, actually give a better demonstration of what the compression is like. So there's that. So consider the tilt table in mind. That wasn't something I pursued, so I'm not going to continue speaking on that. Some tips and tricks, though, that I would tell you that I have learned after the fact. Our vascular system fluctuates. So the arteries, for example, are made out of this pretty hardy material, right? Because you have a lot of pressure going through those arteries to pump blood to these organs. The veins, on the other hand, when that blood is flowing back to the heart, the integrity of them isn't as strong. They're a little flimsier, they're smaller. So if you have a compression going on, so we're talking about blood pressure here. So, for example, a lot of my symptoms would get exacerbated after I would exercise. And exercise was literally like if I walked for too long, if I stood for too long. So that's what I mean here. So anytime I did something that would increase my blood pressure at all, after intercourse, and when I was on my periods, when I was menstruating, and that would cause my blood, like, you know, there's more blood flowing. So my symptoms would be exacerbated because, even though at that one time, so the venogram is a snapshot. So my argument is this: at the time of my venogram, I had a 48% compression. That was a snapshot. That means that when I was laying down on anesthesia, cool, calm, collected, my blood pressure wasn't really high, that there wasn't necessarily a... Those arteries, for example, weren't as engorged with blood, meaning the compression wasn't as bad. So something I've actually learned, and I'll talk about this in the renal Hyaller block episode, and I'll probably continue to talk about it. If I could go back and redo my venogram, I would have done everything I could have to have my blood pumping. I would have had sex the morning of. I would, if you can handle that, right? Like, I know a lot of us are in pain, but I would have gone in as much pain as I could have been in. I would have exacerbated my pain. I would have worked out the night before. I would have had sex that morning. I would have, maybe if you can, schedule it when you're going to be on your period. because looking back, and this is just an estimated guess, I can't say definitively that this is what would have happened. My guess would have been that my compression would have been worse. We would have actually captured a significant pressure gradient and potentially been able to, you know, see more collateral veins there, given that enough of the contrast would have been inserted at that left renal vein. So those are some things. And the reason why this is coming up is when I did my renal Hyaller block, I actually followed this tips and tricks, and I went in on a scale, pain scale of a 9, 9, 10 when I walked in. So I was better able to capture, like, okay, I went in the worst pain, and when they did the renal Hyaller block, it definitely alleviated my symptoms. So I was able to see a bigger contrast there. That led me to think, gosh, like, because I was so nervous throughout this whole process that my venogram wasn't as significant enough, and the venogram is what I would have ended up getting denied, because they were like, well, you don't really have a, you know, you're less than 50% compressed, you don't have a significant pressure gradient. So I'm not saying doing what I just said, these tips and tricks of increasing your blood pressure and stuff like that, is actually going to capture a worse compression for you, is going to capture a pressure gradient. But my argument for that is trying to set yourself up for as much success as you possibly can, because there has been a lot of conversations I've had with other Nutcracker patients where they go in, and again, this is just one snapshot in one moment when that catheter is in there. But blood is ever changing, and when we have an increase in blood pressure, that's going to change whether our arteries are going to be a lot harder because they're more engorged with blood, then making that compression worse on that left renal vein. So you're trying your best to kind of set it up so that when they do get that snapshot, that it can be as representative, it can well represent the constant pain that you do find yourself in during those flares that you're having. So that's my suggestion to you all. I would love to know some of y'all's feedback on that. So that's just kind of some of the things I wanted to touch on in the beginning. Now I want to transition into what was the procedure like. So maybe you have the procedure scheduled and you're nervous about the venogram. Very valid to be nervous. Not that there is anything to be nervous about. Now that I'm on the other side of it, it was the easiest procedure I had done. That and the renal Hyaller block was super easy. But I want to walk you through kind of what the everything I went through on that day to hopefully kind of alleviate some of the anxiety you're having. So I showed up 2 hours prior just to do that kind of standard prep stuff. You'll get in, you'll sign some papers, they'll bring you back, they'll gown you up. For me, they kind of just did the standard stuff, kind of surgery day things. You know, they put an IV in, they got a drip line going, things of that nature. For me personally, they went ahead and gave me some pre-op pain meds. So I requested a Percocet, because a Percocet is the pain medication that works best for me. But they did give me the option. They said, what will work for you? What do you prefer? So I did love that I was given choice. And they also gave me an anti-anxiety med, and some gabapentin, which was great. So I kind of just went in. I was already nervous, right? Like, my biggest thing that makes me most nervous is anesthesia. So the procedure itself, to me, the transplant was very scary. The procedure itself was scary, but anesthesia is always what makes me the most worried. So it was nice kind of going in. So again, make sure if that's something that you would prefer, they cannot give you anti-anxiety meds or any of the medication really until you have signed the informed consent. So just know that that's some protocol on their end. So if you go in and you're like, I need anti-anxiety med right now, they might not be able to give it to you immediately. So just be patient. And then you'll do the informed consent form. And then after that, they just need to make sure that you're of sound mind when you sign that. Something I want to mention on the informed consent. This is very, very important for any procedure you do. Make sure that it is fully noted on the informed consent that they're going to be measuring the particular veins that you want them to measure. There have been a couple people that have had to get repeat venograms done because maybe the interventional radiologist goes in and they just measure your left iliac vein and they don't really give the left renal vein the time of day. And maybe you went in because you care more about the left renal vein than the left iliac. So on your informed consent, make sure that it is written, you know, that they're going to explore whichever all the veins that you want explored. So for me, that was my left iliac vein. I wanted the percentage of the compression. I wanted the pressure gradient. I wanted all the same things. I wanted to see what the collateral system was like, if it was refluxing into areas. And I wanted all four of those things done for my left renal vein. So once I was like prepped to go, then my interventional radiologist comes in and comes bedside and we're talking about the procedure and they proceed to hand me the informed consent. I made sure to read on there that all the things were there before I signed off. There have been some people that have skipped that step, and what happens is if you wake up and they haven't gathered the information like you need, to my knowledge, there's, you know, if you don't, you need it in black and white. So you can't really fight something that you just kind of talked about in good faith. So just make sure that that's on the informed consent. So you'll sign that informed consent, make sure you and the surgeon are on the same page. That's also a time I like to just kind of, you know, talk about if you are having anxiety, maybe ask some questions about recovery as well. So discussed that with my IR, got the informed consent. We agreed that we were going to get all the measurements. I let that her know as well. I said, I need these measurements because I'm sending, these are the actual transplant surgeons told me they need this. So I also tethered it like to say, this isn't me just asking you to do this. This is that they need this to move forward with treating me if I need the treatment. So please don't screw me up. So then anesthesia also comes in. You get the informed consent there. You speak to them as well. So proceed to go into the room. They lay me in the supine position, which is just me laying on my back. And then I proceeded to go under anesthesia. Something I want to say here as well, like I said, anesthesia makes me anxious. Something I switched up doing that I actually really like is I'll ask somebody to hold my hand before I go under. I've never had anybody say no. Everybody's been very much like, oh my gosh, of course. And that's actually helped ease me into this space. I go in, I give a lot of gratitude, just very thankful for them for taking care of me and ask them to hold my hand. And of course I'm, you know, out in about a minute or two. My procedure lasted about 2.5 hours. Just as a reminder, I also got the May Thurner stent at the same time as my diagnostic venogram. So some of that is why my procedure, I think, was a little bit longer than what other people have reported. So I was told that the procedure could be anywhere from like 30 minutes to an hour. So obviously 2.5 hours was a little longer. They had let me know that my May Thurner compression was a lot worse than we expected. So it took them a little finagling to get the stent in. So it took the time was a little bit longer, but just so you know, ask them just to confirm how long it should take. But I was told, you know, kind of that hour mark is that bread and butter recovery. So when I woke up, waking up was kind of similar to any other procedure I have. I woke up feeling great, but again, I had those pain meds in my system, also under anesthesia. They gave me one more pain med before I went home. But with that being said, the recovery was pretty easy for me. I mean, I also had the stent put in, so, but I was walking a mile the next day. I walked the second day late. I walked 2.2 miles a day after that, so I was actually feeling pretty good. I rested, of course, and stayed low-key for about a week. So it was really kind of a week before I was like, okay, we're chilling. I will say this, something to make sure you ask, and you can ask this preemptively kind of before you go in, is any procedure I have, I always ask about, can they prescribe me pain meds? or whatever it is you need. So it doesn't need to be pain meds, but like I said, I let him know. I was like, can you, if you're comfortable and willing, could you prescribe me some pain meds of my choice? Also nausea meds and also muscle relaxers. So my philosophy is this. I would rather have those in stock and not need them than not have them and need them. Now, I really want to make a point here that my relationship with pills might not be the same relationship that other people have with them as well. So, more so, it's not me saying you should ask for pain meds. It's more so me saying whatever medication you feel like would make you feel comfortable, maybe even just a security blanket to have it there, and you might not need it, but it's just nice to have it. Ask for those things. And let them know that, you know, can I specifically have X, Y, and Z? I've tried the others and they don't work, whatever it might be. That's actually helped ease my mental space as well, just knowing that they're like, absolutely, rather than me retroactively having to call while I'm in a pain flare, and then them calling me back and submitting it to pharmacy, then me having to wait for the pharmacy. Sometimes the pharmacy doesn't even have the medication. It's a clusterfuck. So asking that preemptively, having them go ahead and sending it in, the pharmacy's working on that while you're maybe even in the procedure, has really just helped kind of, again, try to be a couple steps ahead of the game. Because as we all know, when you're trying to chase the pain, it's not fun. So again, it took me about a week to heal from like where I was completely back to normal, as I had the diagnostic venogram and the May-Thurner stent placed. Now, I've heard from some people who have just done the diagnostic venogram, some of my friends in this space, that, you know, a couple days. I mean, some of it is just letting the anesthesia wear off, maybe the pain meds wear off, but it wasn't necessarily, it was a pretty easy recovery. I've also heard it reported that people that fly for their venogram, as I didn't fly, mine was here local, that they were able to have the venogram and fly the next day, so there was no issue there. I do want to say, if you get on the Facebook page, you can search in that group. There's some more information there that shares other people's lived experiences. I would love to know, for some of you, maybe you're listening to this and you're like, oh, well, actually my recovery took longer than yours. Mine wasn't as easy as yours. Mine, whatever that is, your lived experience is just as valid. If you want to drop some information, in the comments, you're more than welcome to, or I want to encourage you, if you're listening and you have a venogram up and coming, to, go to the, whether it's the, Nutcracker subreddit, whether it's the Nutcracker Facebook page, to see what other people's lived experiences are, to give you a more well-rounded, again, I'm just one lived experience, but I do hope walking you through what the procedure, the venogram was like. I felt like it was extremely easy. One of the easier procedures I've gone through. It is outpatient, so you're not going to be in the hospital overnight. And hoping the tips and tricks I kind of talked to you about, and, you know, why you need the venogram, what the venogram is, has provided you some insight, and that hopefully if you started out with some anxiety, you feel a little less anxious right now. So with that, as I end every episode, I want to invite you to, wherever you are, to just take that deep breath and slowly exhale. And another deep inhale through your nose. And a slow exhale. Just feeling yourself become more grounded into this present moment. And keep with that flow at your own pace as you transition into possibly listening to the next episode or just going about your day. Whatever is next for you, just give yourself a pat on the back. Be proud of yourself. I am proud of you.